Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 155. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to Colorado. Learn about the natural beauty, including the 14s, and a surprising animal rescue operation. Today on the Amateur Traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into today's interview, I have two news stories for you. The first one is an intriguing plan. If you fly into the Stockholm airport and you're looking for a place to sleep, you might be able to sleep on a plane. Well, that doesn't sound necessarily that attractive since you just got off one, but they're taking an old 747-200 and turning it into a backpacker's hostel. But they're replacing the regular seats with bunk beds so that you'd actually might be able to get a little better night's sleep than you got flying in. ProfessionalTravelGuide.com has created a new list of surprising things also, and that's some of the world's largest. The one that caught my eye was the world's largest burger. So you know that we like our burgers large in America? Well, Denny's Beer Barrel Pub in Pennsylvania has a 100-pound or 45-kilogram hamburger. Of course, they also have smaller versions if you're not that hungry. For more information about those stories, as well as some other news items, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome the show Brad Hugh, who's come to talk to us about Colorado. Brad, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. I'm happy to be here.
And Brad is going to be, by the time this comes out, the host and producer of the Colorado podcast, and we'll give you a URL for that at the end. At the time we're recording this, there's nothing there, but by the time this episode comes out, Brad guarantees me that there'll be an episode for you to listen to if you want to hear more about Colorado. You live in Colorado. Are you from Colorado originally?
I'm not. I'm originally from the Midwest, grew up in Kansas, and then moved all around after university and ended up here in Colorado about 13 years ago. I had some family here, and so we had visited throughout growing up and always had a special place in my life, and just decided to make the move one day after I came out for a three-day weekend and never went back.
And before we get into Colorado as a vacation destination, where are you in Colorado? What part of Colorado?
My wife and I live in Denver.
Okay.
So we're just
right smack dab in the middle of the state.
Right smack dab in the middle of everything.
Okay. And why should someone think about going to Colorado as a destination for a vacation?
Well, I think most people that come here, they see the natural beauty, and you either want to be out active in that, hiking, biking, fishing, or you just want to take it all in, get those great panoramas and end your day by a log fire. But there's also plenty to learn. There's a lot of history in Colorado that parallels Native American history all the way through the expansion of the West. So I think most people come here for the natural beauty and the activities, and they end up learning something along the way.
And before we started recording this, Brad and I were talking, as we are wont to do, and I actually have family in Colorado, had my father's family in Colorado for the last roughly 120 years. My grandfather was actually one of the cowboys on the last roundup in Colorado when he was 16, so I have some affiliation with and some affinity for that Colorado history that you talk about there.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, because as I said, most people come here for the natural beauty, the mountains, right. The prairie in the east, the high desert plains in the west. When you start visiting the towns and start talking to the people, you realize that the history spans back a long way. There's a lot of Native American history all the way from the Plains Indians to the cliff dwellers in Mesa Verde, where right, you can sure. see these amazing homes or houses that were built inside a valley, some 600-700 feet off the valley floor, all the way up through the Spanish and Mexican colonial times. The southern portion of Colorado was actually part of the Spanish overseas lands. And sure. then after Mexican independence, it was part of Mexico up for about 40 years until the Mexican-American War. So there's a lot of history there. And then, of course, as you talked about, the westward expansion, the miners that came here for the gold and the silver and the cowboys later on, all the way up through to the prospectors in energy. So it's a really interesting continuum to talk about and learn about.
And as we look at an itinerary of what you would recommend for, say, a 1 to 2 week vacation in Colorado, let's start first with which season would you recommend? Because there's obviously you get very different tourists in the winter than you do in the summer.
Sure. You do get very different. But what we've found is that here in Colorado, the seasons have all started to blend together as far as it being a tourist destination.
So, sure.
Yes, obviously Colorado is probably most known for the wonderful ski resorts that are here, but summer has become just as big. They realize that there's still plenty to do, whether it's hiking or biking. Personally, fall is okay. my favorite time of the year here, just because the weather is beautiful, it's clear, it's sunny, the leaves are turning, then it gets nice and cool at night. So, as I said, most people probably still come for the skiing in the winter, but they're missing out on quite a bit.
And if I went to Colorado, let's do a sample itinerary here, and I flew into Denver, which is where I'm obviously going to fly in, or to the Denver airport, which is conveniently located in Nebraska, I believe.
Yeah, exactly.
Where would you recommend I go first?
Well, it depends on how much time you have, obviously. If you are coming to Colorado just to hit the mountains, which is, you know, the majority of people, understandably so, I always try to tell people, take a little time along the Front Range. Mm-hmm. Colorado is a huge state. So I think it's the 8th largest, somewhere in that neighborhood. Most of the people live along what's called the Front Range. So there's some really nice cities along here. Denver has an amazing downtown, sports, arts, bike trails everywhere, parks everywhere. I always tell people, decompress a little bit, take some time here, enjoy the city before you head on up, because it's not that far away.
And when we say the Front Range, I'm not sure everybody has the geography of Colorado in their mind. If you look at it, it's a square, it's a rectangular shape, and the right-hand side, the eastern portion, is flat.
It's That's right.
Short
yeah.
grass prairie, and it's a little less than a mile high, most of it, and then the whole western part of the state is quite bumpy, the
That's
Rocky
right.
Mountains. So that frontal range there is that ridge that runs up and down the middle of the state.
Yeah, basically the Midwestern Prairie, if you come in through Kansas, about the eastern quarter of Colorado, mm-hmm. you wouldn't know that you weren't in Kansas.
Right.
It's just the
sure.
same geography. And it runs all the way up to Denver, where the foothills start. The Front Range, when you hear people talking about that, that's Pueblo to Fort Collins, which is about a 150, 160 mile range. And that's where all the population is, and primarily jutted up against what we call the foothills, which are the beginnings of the mountains.
Okay. So we're going to spend a little time, it sounded like, in Denver before we head off.
Yeah.
Anything specific you would recommend in Denver to see?
Just enjoy the urban atmosphere is what I tell people. Get downtown.
Okay.
It's a great place to be. There's entertainment, all kinds of restaurants. All of the sport arenas are primarily centered around the downtown, in the downtown. So it's a very lively downtown area, but it's also got bike trails all the way through it. There's two rivers that meet right in the middle downtown, which is where the original Denver was founded. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of outdoor activities right here. Denver itself has a wonderful arts community. Just opened up a brand new wing to the art museum. That's kind of world-renowned from an architectural standpoint now. There's all kinds of things to do. But I know that most people that do come to Colorado, fly in, take the time, they are going to get up to the mountains as probably as fast as they can,
mm-hmm.
which are very close. From downtown Denver, you can see the peaks about 20 miles away, that's when you really get into what Colorado is all about for most people, and that's the activities and the nature. Just an amazing place, whether you want to ski, snowboard, go hiking, go fishing, it's all pretty much right there at your doorstep along the Front Range.
Okay. So we're probably going to rent a car, I'm assuming, in Colorado to get around.
Yeah. 400 miles long around there. So you're not going to get many places. You can get from the airport with shuttles and cabs and all that. But after that, you really do need a car to get around. The itinerary that I've sent people on before, I just call it the Great Colorado Loop. And you're going to put a lot of miles in and be driving every day because some of the most spectacular things are very spread out. And that's just kind of the way it is. Now, that being said, if you're here just to go skiing, just go up into the resort areas, those are about an hour and a half to 2 hours away. Mm-hmm. And there are shuttle services and all that. But most people that come do rent a car if they want to see more of the state.
And the resort areas, probably Vail and Aspen, probably being the two most popular.
Yeah, those are the ones that most people have heard about.
Is there one they should know about that's not as well known that they should skip those two and go to? Or are those the right places to go?
Depends what you're going for. If you want the nightlife and if you want to be seen, Vail and Aspen are definitely the places to go.
Right.
And that's not to take anything away from their skiing, because in my personal opinion, Vail has some of the best skiing territory in their back bowls of any place I've ever been. Mm-hmm. But I also like hitting some of the smaller resorts, places like Monarch and Eldora and Loveland. They're not as crowded, not as expensive. I think most people that go there will tell you they're probably more pure. So there's a lot of rivalry that goes on between the resort areas. If you want to get off the beaten path, which is something I'll talk about later, because that's something I love to do in this state, is just kind of get off the highways and go visit some of the little towns. And that carries over into the resorts, because I think their last count somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 different ski areas.
Okay.
There's a lot more than just Vail and Aspen out there.
Now, you mentioned the Great Circle route here in Colorado. What is the route that you send your friends on?
Typically, I'll send them west right away. And if they want to start in the mountains and do the hiking, the biking, the skiing, the fishing, they'll head right to the resort areas. Or what I like to do is kind of ease people into it and have them get a taste of Colorado that a lot of people don't. So I'll send them south to begin with. If you head down to like Colorado Springs, which is about an hour south of Denver, there's an amazing what they call the Mountain Zoo. It's the highest zoo in North America. So it has the largest giraffe herd, and it's all built up on the side of a mountain. So you're overlooking the city. There's the Garden of the Gods, and it's just these amazing rock formations. You sometimes feel like you're on Mars. And that's all right in the city of Colorado Springs. And then have them continue on down south along the Arkansas River so they can kind of get a sense of a mountain river and canyons, and head over to the Collegiate Peaks, which are a range of what we call 14ers here in the state. So we've got, what is it, I think over 50, like 53 peaks over 14,000 feet, a little over 4,000 meters. You see majestic peak after peak in the Collegiate Peaks area. And then
You do have a little head start there, what with the ground being about a mile up, so.
True. True. Yeah, but does not make it any less dramatic, I promise. And then from there, I like sending people down to the southern part of the state, kind of the southern mid portion of the state, especially a place, and I know this is always one of your later questions. You talk about what do people or the guidebooks or tourists miss, and I tell people every time they come that they have to visit the San Luis Valley. It's an enormous valley about 100 miles long, 80 miles wide, in the southern portion of the state that runs into New Mexico. But down there, you have these amazing mountain ranges. There's one on each side. You have the largest sand dunes in North America. It blows your mind when you're in these massive peaks. And then you see sand dunes, the tallest one's over 700 feet tall. So you can actually go skiing or sledding down these amazing sand dunes, and you feel like you're in the middle of Sahara. It's just incredible. They're a little quirky down there as well. It's the UFO capital of Colorado, kind of that area.
Okay.
A lot of sightings down there. There's an alligator rescue mission down there.
An alligator rescue in Colorado?
In Colorado, exactly. That's the reaction most people have. There's a lot of fault lines that run along the valley. So there's a lot of hot springs because of the magma coming up close to the surface. And because of that, there's a family down there that decided they were going to raise alligators. And then it turned into a rescue mission. So they take in alligators. It's called the Colorado Gator Farm. So, like I said, it's kind of quirky down there. There's a lot of history. That's the area that actually used to be part of Mexico. And so there are little towns and hamlets down in that portion of the state where the families living there are actual descendants of Spanish settlers during that portion of history. So some old missions and that type of thing. So it's an area that most people don't know about or think about. I think that's going to change a bit. The Great Sand Dunes is actually our nation's newest national park. They had some type of special designation, but they actually got park status about 4 years ago.
Oh, okay.
So there are more and more people going down there, but the sand dunes in that area, San Luis Valley, you just can't miss it. It gives you a taste of Colorado that most people don't get.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, again, there's a lot of driving involved in this, but from there, I have people go across the southern portion of the state, and you start getting into the mountains again, because you've been in kind of this high plains, almost desert-like area. You start getting into some of the magnificent mountain peaks again, and I send people all the way across the southern portion of the state to Mesa Verde. I mentioned it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to describe, but just to give you a little flavor, last time I was there, you're crawling up these reconstructed wooden ladders to go from one cliff to the next. And then there's adobe housing. Some of them are 2-3 stories tall that are fit into caves up on the cliff face. So you're sitting there, kind of have your back to the valley looking at this, and then you turn around. There's an amazing vista. You're above the birds. Last time we were there, raptors flying below us in the valley. So it's just something you have to see to really get a sense for.
And before we leave Mesa Verde, and this is going to be your history quiz here because I don't recall, the people who built Mesa Verde were the Sinagua or the...
There's actually some controversy about that.
Okay.
For the longest time, they were known, I believe you pronounce it the Anasazi.
Anasazi, okay.
But it turns out that that may have been a name given to them by one of their rival tribes. And so it... turns out that may not have been a very nice term. So
that's the people, but we're not sure about the name is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay.
They're most commonly referred to now as the ancestral Pueblos.
Okay.
Pueblo means.
So that would predate, for instance, I was talking about the Sinagua who were in Arizona, for instance, Tuzugut in Montezuma's castle.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's what they think now, is that they actually had to leave Mesa Verde, which is Spanish for basically Green Mountain. So it was a very lush area
green
where
table.
They lived there. Green Table, excuse me, yes. It's a large mesa, so Table Mountain. They think that there was a drought, water shortages, and everybody had to move off. Somewhere in the neighborhood of between 50 and 75,000 people were kind of up in this area, and they all had to move off Mesa Verde and down into New Mexico, into Arizona. So
interesting.
A lot of migration history to understand there as well. And then it's time to head up to what we call out here the Western Slope.
Mm-hmm.
And it is high plains, desert with a lot of plateaus, a lot of mountains. But you're also, when you're not in the mountains, you could feel like you're in southern Utah or Nevada, very arid. There's a lot of natural beauty.
Is there a part of Colorado that's not arid?
No, good point. Okay. Yeah, for people that don't know, you know, you imagine these feet upon feet of snow, which is true, but it is a very dry state. I think that's one of the things that surprises people when they come out here is that we're not lush. Our beauty comes from the amazing vistas and the giant mountains, not from the lush rainforest-like atmosphere.
I think Colorado is one of the only places that I've seen it snow in Boulder, where I used to do some work, and then it would sublimate. It would immediately evaporate and wouldn't melt. And
yeah,
so you
absolutely.
See snow, piles of snow and no puddles, and then the snow goes away, but it's just that dry.
You know, and that's one of the things that I was going to talk about the biggest surprise is that if you're not above 8,000-9,000 feet, we actually have very nice winters.
Mm-hmm.
Because it'll snow, and then as you said, it'll just go away So everybody living in Denver and along the Front Range, I've been golfing quite a few times in January and February. So
yeah, my father said that growing up in Colorado, they said if you didn't like the weather, just give it 5 minutes.
That's right. That's right. One of the more recent campaigns that the state ran is Colorado, sunnier than Florida, because there's something like 330 days of sunshine.
Interesting.
But that sunshine can turn into a raging blizzard within the space of 5 hours. So
sure.
The Western Slope, it's an interesting area. It doesn't have the giant towering mountains. A lot of, as I said, kind of canyon lands. Mm-hmm. Think back to those old Westerns where they have the mesas and the buttes in the background. It's a lot like that. There are a lot of orchards. There's actually a fairly large wine-producing area of the state, which I don't think a lot of people know about.
I assume a dry red wine or something like that.
It is, yeah. There's a lot of home labels or state labels that are starting to pop up and do very well on the wine scene. But I think most of the grapes that are produced are shipped to the wineries on the West Coast. So after that, now you start kind of heading back east, and now you're getting into, I think, what most people consider Colorado when they're thinking about it, the Continental Divide Mountains, peak after peak after peak, where all the resorts are, Aspen coming up from that direction, Vail. At this point, you're kind of falling right down the middle of the state, and you just start running into resort after resort after resort. The resorts are interesting because they're there, obviously, for the skiing. That's why they were created. But they really have turned into 12-month-a-year operations where there's always something going on, except for right at the end of ski season, kind of end of April for most of them, mid to end of April, they have what's called mud season. That's when that's when everything, the snow starts to melt and all the locals take off to Mexico to go surfing or go fly fishing down in South America. So it's about a two-week period. And then they're right in the midst of their summer season. So there's always something to do. From there, from the kind of the mid portion of the state, what I call the mountain areas, I like sending people up kind of north. And really one of the jewels of the state in my eyes, and I think in a lot of people's eyes, in the national park system is Rocky Mountain National Park.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. It's just another one of those places you kind of have to see to believe. But
although my car didn't like it, I will say, when we were there back in
that's
the 80s,
right,
driving up to 11,000 feet, I didn't know if the car would make it. But
yeah, the highest. Oh, they have some designation, but there's a road. It's called Ridgetop Road. It takes you, what do they call it?
Trail Ridge Road, I think.
Trail Ridge Road will take you up and over. So the park's basically divided in two. There's kind of the western side, which not as many people get to. Then the eastern side, which has the Stanley Hotel that Stephen King made famous, and Estes Park area. And whether you're a family bringing your kids out to experience the mountains for the first time, or you're an avid backcountry hiker, there's plenty for everybody. They say that one of the little secrets of the park is you walk more than 30 minutes from a parking area, and you've got the entire park to yourself after that point. So
now, what they don't point out is at 11,000 feet, if you walk 50 feet from the parking area, you're probably out of breath. So
that's very true, especially when you go up on Trail Ridge Road. There's a nice area to get out up there.
Right, exactly.
You can always tell who's in from out of state.
Who the Flatlanders are, exactly.
That's right. That's right. That loop, which can be done in 5 days, would be pushing it.
Sure.
A week, you can do it. 10 days, you're really giving yourself enough time in each spot to get a really good understanding and feeling for the areas you're in. But that really kind of encapsulates all that I like about Colorado, which is all the diverse areas and brings in some of the history. But like I said, it's a very big state, so there's a lot of little corners to explore.
And we had some questions that actually got posted on the discussion boards, amateurtraveler.com/board, from Aaron. And one of the questions that Aaron asked was a great place to eat, especially in Denver or Colorado Springs. Now, I think of Colorado, I think of a good steak, but what am I missing, or what really should I do if I'm in that area?
Denver was known as a cow town.
Sure.
That's after its mining history, that's how it put itself on the map. So, yeah, very easy to get a good steak in this town. Our growing season's kind of short in comparison to a lot of places, but when things are in season, always go with the local produce, which is everywhere around here. The fruit, I mentioned before, the cherries, the plums, the peaches from the western slope, cantaloupes from kind of the prairie, southern prairie areas.
Any restaurants you can think of that are worth going out of your way for?
If you want to get the tourist experience, there are a couple. The Buffalo Exchange in Denver. I believe they have the oldest restaurant license in the state, and they serve all game. So whether you want to try elk or deer, anything like that, it's kind of makes you feel like you're back on the old frontier and you're bringing in the wild game.
Okay.
As far as particular restaurants, what I tell people is there's just a great Hispanic influence in the state because of the history. In particular, what are called green chilies. It's a New Mexico take on Tex-Mex, although that demeans it a little bit because I think it goes back. It's got its own history. You know? But if you can try green chilies, they're a particular type of chili grown down in New Mexico and Colorado southern border. And then they're picked green, fire roasted, and just has this amazing taste. The recipe is called green chili, and it's a pork and green chili sauce that you can either eat by itself with tortillas, or what we've kind of turned it into here is an incredible side for breakfast burritos, which if you live in Denver for any certain amount of time, that's what you're going to end up eating for breakfast, is breakfast burritos with green chili.
Okay.
And so you can get those in fancy restaurants. You can get those in street side stands. Look for green chili, New Mexico cuisine, that type of thing.
Okay. And then we also did a question about nightlife.
Mm-hmm.
Any things that stand out in terms of nightlife, especially in the cities there on the Frontal Range?
Yeah, I can speak most directly to Denver.
Okay.
15 years ago, downtown Denver wasn't really that happening of a place. About 15 years ago, they built a baseball field right in the middle of downtown. The Broncos, the football team, their stadium has always been kind of on the edge of downtown. So it's revitalized the entire area, really. It's actually one of the downtowns that you think about where you can actually live and work and play. So that everything down there, there's an area called LODO, which just stands for Lower Downtown. Club after bar after microbrew lines the blocks. So also right in downtown Denver is where all of the cultural attractions are, whether it's the Colorado Ballet, the Performing Arts Center. They're all right in about an 8-block radius, really, all the sporting venues, the cultural art places. So if you head to LODO, you're going to have your choice of fine cuisine all the way down to plain bar food. And there's plenty to do. It's an area that is just happening, going really from Wednesdays all the way through Sundays if there are sporting events going on. So there's quite a vibrant nightlife.
As we start to wind this down before this turns into a 2-part episode, do you have one experience that to you is uniquely Colorado?
Can I have two?
Sure.
Okay. One is, I just remember a time hiking in the mountains. I had started it like at 4 a.m. to try to reach a peak for sunrise. Just getting up there, it was a 14,000 foot peak, and finally got there and was able to watch the sunrise from that. And just to see peak after peak of mountains kind of appear as the sun would hit them. To me, that is Colorado for me. To see that. And the second one, it's not really one particular day, but once a year, I'll try to get in a day where I call it the Colorado triple header. Go up skiing in the afternoon, come back down to Denver, and try to bike and go golfing all in the same day. That really, to me, speaks to what Colorado is all about. There's just so many things to do, and the beauty is just amazing. So those are really the two quintessential Colorado experiences for me.
Okay. And in terms of resources to learn more about Colorado, I think we would certainly recommend the ColoradoPodcast.com, assuming that you get that up before this episode gets out.
Yeah, we'll that will be a more in-depth look at just some of the things I find interesting, whether it's a sports team or whether it's history or the Great Sand Dunes. But if you go to the tourism website in Colorado, they all have a list of everything, and Lonely Planet, Fromers, they all have pretty extensive Colorado sections as well. So jump online. There's plenty of information out there.
And then in summary, what 3 words would you use to summarize Colorado?
Beautiful, active, and natural.
Okay.
So a very beautiful, natural place, and everybody that here is very active. So prepare to go home with some sore legs.
Our guest has been Brad Hugh. Thanks, Brad, for coming on the show and telling us your love for your adopted state there in Colorado.
Thank you, Chris. I didn't mention this before, but you were kind of the inspiration for doing a podcast about Colorado. So after listening to The Amateur Traveler, I decided we needed something like this for locals here in the state.
Sounds great. And hey, if you want to hear stories of Colorado history going back to the 1800s, I've got a few of them. But thanks so much for coming.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
I have one internet resource for you today, and that is flightweight.com. Flightweight.com put in a particular airport in the U.S., I believe, and it will give you a Google Map mashup that will show you pictorially what flight segments are being delayed and by how much for that particular airport. So check that out, flightweight.com. In the community news portion of the show, I did get a question that I forgot to ask Russell when he was talking about the Faroe Islands, so I sent an email, and that was, what's the difference between the Faroe Islands and Iceland? And Russell said there are a lot of similarities between the Faroes and Iceland, shared colonial history with Denmark, Viking settlements, harsh climate, looking to the sea for survival, the Old Norse language, but many differences. The Faroes aren't nearly as industrialized as Iceland, nor do they appear to want to be, and they don't have the foreign investment capabilities or the tourism. And Russell says, I've heard it said that the Faroes are like Iceland was in the early 1970s. I wasn't alive then, but I can see what they mean. The other thing that I'm hoping is a big deal for me and almost imperceptible to you is The Amateur Traveler is moving. We're changing where The Amateur Traveler is hosted this weekend. This show should be the first one up at my new hosting provider at Libsyn.com, which will enable me to sell ads better because my contract with Mevio has expired, and so I am independent again and glad to be. So I'm hoping there are no issues with that. If you do run into an issue, obviously if you're hearing this, you probably didn't, but if you do run into an issue, please let me know. Also, as part of that change, The Amateur Traveler is now, again, part of the Blueberry Network. That's blueberry.com with no E's. And with that, we'll bring this episode of The Amateur Traveler to a close. If you have any questions, feel free to post them at amateurtraveler.com or drop me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe.